Okay, everyone, welcome back. So we're gonna get back. I think the rest of this part will be a discussion. First, Alex wanted to share something with us for EcoService, actually. So it's just gonna give him a minute to share something he has, and if folks have more questions, he can talk about it after. Did you need?
There is a suspension system for sacks. What we decide, this is team, we decide to use this for collection for the garbage. This is this is cassette method. When we use the sacks between these two rings, we can hold approximately 60 kilograms inside sack. We try this spec. And also, this part, it's like usual terminal disc, what they use for work here, standard size. Now we have our team. We have some example like this. It extended in our model. You can see this, but it attached it to the pillar. Yes, but here is simplest variant and cheapest also. Some parts here is from stainless steel. This is frame. It's separately from usual steel. Can be attached to the wall straight on the glue on cement too. And the cover. Also, it's approximately 100 rupees, so it's can be cheap. Here is deep idea for if somebody give me some questions about this thing, it's leading long discussion. So.
You sell this device in your place?
Sell? No. No, but we have some examples.
So this is a type of waste collector?
Extended.
This is a type of collector, a waste collector?
Yes.
Can you open the pictures that it shows or it does not? It does not.
Yeah, go for it.
There is a working...
So we have actually have a picture of the...
Of the prototype?
Yeah.
But,
what I understand is this is for various communities in Morroville so that they can go around and efficiently pick up things that are already sorted. Is that the idea?
Is that
to improve the collection and
the easiest way to collect the...
So just simplify the system so it's
in the... Okay.
I have to go down. Please.
Can you... There's nothing else?
So right now people are using barrels and piles.
That's all that's in this pile. Nothing more.
Actually, there are beautiful bins on the market in India.
Awareness.
Perfect stuff, but it's very expensive. Even from the German manufacturers of these huge collection bins from 100 meters to
1,000 liters, 2,000 liters.
It's all available in India, but...
So Alexei has made...
Your group
has made these, and they are available in the world.
Okay, well,
I wanted to show
you that. Like, how is this device going to assist
you? You would have to ask the collection team, Rajamani of EcoService, where the actual issues are. You see, we have in the older communities a certain amount of separation, but also a certain amount of mess and mixing. And how to help the household level, the community level, to keep it separated and to keep it protected against rain without having to build an extra shed, an extra roof, an extra building, all these are issues. If you have a wall, you can attach this to the wall and it is protected from the rain and it can come. To so much volume and weight, so it all has to be in line, in tune with the frequency in collecting, and the size of the community.
This is the game that we
have created. These are the practical issues in the ecosystem. That is why things don't go well. So I need solutions like this.
I think so far most communities do make compost, so that's not so much an issue, but as the apartment buildings and all are coming up, I think that the composting unit that they're creating will be very useful.
But this was all about non-compostable days.
Oh, okay,
this was all about the trash, not the fire.
So this is about collection services. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you.
Okay, that's it.
Basically, wanted to just quickly go over some of the ideas of the integral framework, just since we're talking about it, and just some of the conversations we were having before we get into more of a discussion. I thought I'd frame it in this quadrant model. We went over this in some of the first week, and basically what the integral approach does, just and with when we're talking about sustainability, is to break it into these four quadrants that represent the internal individual, so the I, the internal communal, which is the we, the external individual, which is it, and then the external communal, which is it. And so basically, I just wanted to go over how I'm seeing some of these going together with what we're talking about here. So the I quadrant deals with the psychological and emotional, the internal individual processes, as well as the spiritual. What we're talking about, what I really saw, particularly when Lucas was talking, was this idea of influencing behaviors through, and so behaviors would be in the it quadrant. So that's kind of this idea of what are people doing? What are the actual behaviors that people do in their lives? And those are influenced by the beliefs and concepts that people have, the internal processes. And so to influence the behaviors, you actually have to affect the internal, the psychological. And so the messages that he's talking about, I'm seeing, is really coming from that approach. And the other thing is, on a media, on an advertisement-based scale, that's actually affecting the community. So that's the cultural messages that are going on within India, is there's certain ways that the culture perceives of trash and of waste, and if we can change those through these messages that affect the individual, then it can have a larger effect. And then the interesting thing is, what I wanted to mention is that in this is quadrant, the systems is what we're really looking at, is these giant piles of trash that are occurring, these landfills are appearing, and unfortunately. So this is what is frequently focused on. How do we change these systems? How does the government make decisions that are going to influence the systems, the physical landfill, and that kind of thing? And that's what a lot of environmental approaches frequently look at. Okay, we gotta attack the systems, or affect those. And what frequently gets left out is all these other ideas of influencing the individual, what's going on internally, and particularly what's going on communally, because that's really where the possibility for large-scale change exists. But really what integral theory says is that each of these have to be touched on equally, and that improvements occur when all of them are being affected and changed. So we affect the individual, we affect the behaviors and actions and the materials, and then the community and the cultural shift occurs, and then the systems change. So just wanted to address that, and if anyone wants to refer in our discussion that we're going to have in this way, I think it's a good approach. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to comment on integral theory. I believe that what you just heard is not integral. I believe that represents a disintegration of the reality of human psychology. But if you know that in advance, then you can look at a graphic disintegration of the whole and realize that actually those four quadrants aren't separate. But when you take Wilbur's integral model, and we discussed this in seminars here for years, actually, and written a lot about integral psychology. So I hope I'm not just off the wall here. There are two fundamental problems with this concept of integralism that I think it's important to be aware of. One is that the idea that the upper right quadrant is, in Wilbur's terminology, represents physical structures, and that behaviors are physical structures, is fundamentally false. Behaviors are vital structures, and vital relationships are generally not considered in Wilbur's psychology. So you have the upper two, inner and outer, represent somehow the individual, and the bottom two somehow represent society. On the left side, society's values. On the right side, society's structures. On the top, the inner values or inner processes on the left, and on the right, outer processes. But what drives those processes, what integrates those processes, and what the society or the individual really consist of are many factors that are not apparent on this kind of graphic analytical model. So I would suggest that in your mind you also add one level with two sides in the middle, which consists of not just what we think and what our values are, that would be the top and the bottom left, what we think or how we think, and on the bottom what our cultural values are, what our conditioning is, but insert in there what our motives are, and our drives, and our needs, and all of the things that are expressions of our inner development and our inner development and our outer development express many energies and drives that would fall into a kind of intermediate psychological aspect of the human being and the society. So if we look at garbage, for example, people are consuming a lot of stuff. Now that's not strictly speaking cultural, and it's not strictly speaking psychological. It's not strictly speaking physical behavior or structural behavior or social behavior. It's a psychological drive to consume, to have, to enjoy, to grow, to increase. And so Indian society right now is totally dominated by this dynamic of consumption, which is separate from its cultural values, and it's separate from our idea of an evolving inner awareness. It is a fundamental drive of human society and the human being. So I think a real integral model is going to have to add to the Wilbur concept, which is mostly mental on the top and socio whatever structural on the bottom, this idea that we are an evolving species and all of life is made up of vital energy, and the biosphere is alive, and to take into consideration the needs, the real needs that people have, and the reason why waste is being created as a part of evolutionary dynamics, is actually not reducible either to mental concepts or cultural values and interpretation. It's not reducible. So, you know, the biosphere isn't reducible to either of these quadrants. So I believe that's a fundamental problem with the Wilbur model. the inner and the outer, the psychological and the structural definitely are good ways of understanding what we are and what we do. But they're all one. That's the first problem with this kind of analysis. We tend to think that they're not one when we see them separated like that. And number two, there's a fundamental important domain of our existence, in fact, the primary domain of our existence, which is not represented there, in my view.
Thanks.
I would like to say something about the general psychology of weight, because Dr. Lucas mentioned today one interesting thing, that most of the campaigns going on go into the void, are wasted money, and don't have a real impact. And I feel that we have to do a lot of research work, psychological research work. What is the reason why all these campaigns can't have an impact? And I have a certain clue what it could be. The human body, or the living animals or whatever, are consuming biological beings. That means they consume something and then they transform it into waste. While consuming, using energy from the fruits, from the vegetables, from whatever they eat, and transforming it into urine and shit. So it is a process which is going on in the human body or in the animal body, that valuable thing is transformed in a kind of a waste of garbage. So as this process goes on inside our body, we might have the tendency to reproduce it outside of our body in the industry, that we run industries in the same way, that we have the input of good materials, of basic materials, we transform them, and then we put them into the waste. And this process, this cycle of process, I feel has to be broken somehow in our mind and in our consciousness. We have to create a new type of consciousness of not just consuming the earth as a fruit or a vegetable and transforming it into shit and urine, but we have to understand that we are living in a more or less closed system which not much can be added, and the resources are limited. So at a certain moment we will not be able to feed this circuit with a lot of things like petrol or minerals or other things which have a limited quantity and which belongs to the humanity as a whole and which cannot just be consumed and transformed into garbage. So I feel that there is a very important research work, a psychological research work, how we can break these circles and create another awareness. And I feel all these campaigns which have been done up to now maybe do not go deep enough in the emotional setting of human beings. And it's not a type of a trick to have some celebrities to catch the people, but we have to go a little bit deeper and understand what inside ourselves is leading to this type of behavior, what is leading to this type of action, and then find out what could be changed, what could be the different type of attitude towards Earth, towards this Gaia principle, towards nature, and also towards the end product of our consumption, which is garbage or waste. And if we can change this attitude inside ourselves and have a other idea of not having industries producing all these waste stuffs and produce and avoiding the waste from the beginning, having maybe another attitude also of consuming things, then we might come to a conclusion which can be more helpful because I feel we have not yet found a clue in, on the psychological and emotional level how to stop this greed of consumption and then this transformation process to putting everything into garbage or waste. This trash mentality is somewhere very deep inside us, and in older ages where most of the trash was biodegradable, it was no problem. But now as we produce a lot of non-biodegradable waste, it becomes a very big problem, and it becomes very important that we find a real solution which is sustainable for everybody. Good.
Thank you. I saw a few hands, so.
Victor. I think it will be interesting this issue of fraud, whether there is something missing in this scheme. It was not clear for many people because they didn't maybe participate in other paradigms and didn't see this problem. And actually, Lucas is addressing it from another perspective, which is not fitting into the scheme. You will see it. You will address it to the psychological first, this upper left corner, but it is not there, actually. It's somewhere else. It's in the communication or expression of that individual. That vital element is missing in the scheme. And because of that, it would not work. It would work only as a theoretical thing. It may be a good framework for thinking together, but it won't do a job that we are looking for. So your issue, how to address this vitally, how to express it in vital terms, psychologically deeply enough, and also reaching to the outside, to the life of others, is not in this scheme. Hmm. So it's quite an important thing. And by the way, in the nature there is no waste. When we think that we eat something, the fruit, and then we produce urine, that urine is a part of nature. And it would be fine if it would stay there. But since we produce so many other things without thinking how to deal with them, then we have this problem of waste. And we mix them together and they stay together and cannot even fall apart in a natural way. So separating of waste is the beginning of new thinking. And I noticed that in my life, because we in the Soviet Union, we had a big problem with garbage, more than anywhere else in the world, most probably more than in India, because we were mixing garbage. So you have only one bucket for everything, and then the special truck is coming every evening, and 6 o'clock in the evening you have to put that trash out. But everything, which is there, food and all other mixed trash. So that was compressed in the truck, burned inside, and then dumped somewhere. But that was not a solution, because plastic cannot be burnt and so on and so forth, and all that stays with those places. What we saw in India, we had in the Soviet Union. There was nobody thinking about separating waste. Now, in our world, it's so obvious, if you come to our community, Pravkana, you will see that our waste, biodegradable waste, is used for composting. We have our own special place where we put it together with your products, we mix it, and we use for our garden. Our water is also circulated and used for gardening. So basically we don't have biodegradable waste. We have only plastic and paper, which we put separately, and it goes to that place where it is sorted out. Such a simple solution. And you can see that that waste trash, which is not biodegradable, is separately stored. I have these plastic bags from yogurt. I wash them, and they have to be clean before they go into the trash. It's an important part. It cannot stink there with the yogurt inside, or milk. So this has to be, and it's very easy to do. Once it is rolling, when that awareness is there, separation of waste is the beginning of investment. I think we have to look into that more.
I see a few hands, so maybe I saw that one first, and then you two.
I want to point out that actually waste is not a problem. We seem to understand that waste something is a problem, so I want to say that the problem is not the waste. The problem is not the plastic. The problem is not the waste. And these are all byproducts of the process from which we all economically, culturally, socially, psychologically benefit. It's like an overall system, as Vladimir pointed out. Urine comes out of the system, it's part of the system, and garbage is part of the planet and the earth. The problem we have is the scale, not the waste. Urine is at 250 tons of garbage. If it's 10 tons, it's not a problem. It's 250 tons today. Tomorrow it's 500, then it's 10,000, then it's 100,000. That is the problem. So it's the size and the rapid growth of it. We are not able to deal with it. And that is the problem, not the garbage itself. And in order to fix this, we're looking at this, sorting out the separation of kinds of things. Yes, that is definitely looked at. But you need to look at overall system. And when, the other day I went walking down the street to La Palin, there's a new shop, sort of 7-Eleven came. Like a grocery, replacing an online grocery stores. And when I went there, I saw this refrigerator full of all these plastic bottles and all the tetra packs and the cookies, everything wrapped in plastic. My first impression is, oh my God, what a garbage. If you actually take the weight of the whole place, maybe 30% is plastic, garbage, in the sense of which is going up into the bin, which we're not consuming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you need to look at the source of the stuff. You need to look at the whole process. What we're talking about, separation, is just one tail end of the last part. And it's like a hard disk, you know, you can get a bigger hard disk. You get filled up with more trash very quickly. So if you can reduce it, the source, in terms of packaging, in India that's a big problem. Most of the garbage is packaging actually of various kinds. When the plastic and the paper are put together, they come separate. All the packaging, sort of plastic, these sort of things. And that means the companies which are manufacturing, the designers, and also the consumers who buy it and how you transport it, all the bunch of issues there. And today, the best solution we have in this world today is plastic and this. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there in the first place. It was the one which is most economically viable and technically viable, socially acceptable, and that's why it's there in the first place. So my suggestion is we need to look at the overall system, the whole process of it, and fix at different points in the system. By just looking at the tail end, we'll not solve anything. And in my view, the problem is the scale. So if we can find ways to separate garbage faster so that it doesn't go anymore, or it can dispose of in a faster way, the scale of it, we can try to manage the scale of it, then we don't have a problem.
But doesn't segregation imply exactly that? When you start segregating, then you can dispose of it faster?
Segregation, it's one small step, I'm saying, I think it's much more.
The source of the problem, I've got a quotation here by Albert Schweitzer, and perhaps that's the solution. It's called youth. I was looking for something because there are so many young people here, but it also addresses us elderly human beings. It's very dangerous for elderly beings, so be aware now. Youth is not a period of life. It's an attitude of mind. Youth is the energy of the will, the enthusiasm of imagination, the strength of emotions, the victory of courage over cowardice, the triumph of the desire for adventure over laziness. No one grows old because he or she has spent some dozen of years on this planet. One only grows old when one has departed from one's ideals and visions. In the course of a lifetime, the skin gets wrinkles. With a loss of enthusiasm, our soul gets dry. You are as young as your optimism and faith, as old as your doubts, as young as your self-esteem, and as old as your anxiety, as young as your aspirations and hopes, and as old as your pessimism, as long as the ideas of beauty, joy, courage, courage and grandeur can reach your heart, so long you will be young. Albert Schweitzer.
I'm just actually really curious about what he was discussing earlier about trying to take waste and compact it and use it for building. And I was wondering if maybe you could explain that idea a little bit more, if you've worked on it, maybe explain how viable it is and what kind of waste products you could use to do that.
Sure, very briefly. Because, you know, it's a lot of technical things, but simply you know that Tautran, whose presentation you saw, has this earth press in which he presses the earth with a little bit of cement to make a stabilized earth block. Well, there's all sorts of things that could be added to that from the so-called waste stream that would, you know, also make a block. And that little press that's available, a hand press, puts 15 tons of pressure on whatever's in there. So you can crunch down in many things into something, and if there's a little kind of binder with it, maybe some earth or whatever, I mean, we're going to do some experiments there at the Earth Institute on that. And then secondly, Oroville is producing a certain amount of landfill that goes out to Oro Nan and is dumped in a pit. That could be perhaps compacted into bales, because everybody knows about straw bale houses that have been made, and but we can make garbage bales. And those garbage bales can be sealed in many ways. There are new types of materials. There's a ceramicrete, for example, which seals nuclear waste, which is a natural product that could possibly be used. There are many, many products that have developed through technology that could seal. You might not even need to seal, you might just do a wire mesh with a ferrocement and make a beautiful wall. And inside is all this stuff compacted and it's stabilized and, building material. So those are just a couple of things. The other one quick idea that I had for one, if you go out to the dump, you'll notice there's one product out there that is everywhere. And that is the chapel. The rubber chapels are everywhere because they break easily and people throw them away. They're cheap, they buy another pair. There's tons of them out there. So I was thinking that would make a wonderful floor. You turn the chapel over because they all have straps or pegs on them or something. It will stick in a soil cement floor. You could arrange them all, pack them all down nicely, have a beautiful soft floor, put a coating of linseed oil on it, wax it, beautiful, colorful. There's a huge source of material out of the dump. That's just one thing.
Plastic, something like, I'm making something on the angle, like this here. With plastic, you can make this type of wallets. And this bottle, with you can put like this, six bottles with make like this type of seats, sitting table. And my English is not very good. With this caps, with you can make earrings. These things. And chips packets inside, like chips packets are like this. You can make with solar ovens, and you make inside in this solar, that solar oven in good ground.
I think that for me is the challenge that it sounds like we're kind of debating, like whether we reuse the waste that we're creating or how do we stop it at the source, and that's I think there's both that need to come from it, but.
All is around anywhere, but you can make like something with this.
There are so many different levels which we constantly address here. With my presentation, I wanted to bring something together, and I would like to do it again at this point. One thing is to understand ecological cycles of water, air, resources, elements. So when we drop out of that thinking, if we think in linear ways, linear processes, then we lose the context of ecology, nature, biology, the biosphere. So of course, human waste, human excreta are a resource for producing soil, for the next crop, for the next food, etc., etc. This system is there, that's nature. Of course, everything else should be in the same cycle. Should be. But humans have invented a lot of mind-made molecules which cannot be easily taken up by nature and turned back into the cycle. We have synthetic stuff which nature doesn't know how to deal with it. Then we call it non-biodegradable because it is not happening in a year, but only maybe in 5,000 years. It will happen, but not in our lifetime. We call it non-biodegradable. So all this is the intellectual part of it. We have to understand that everybody who works in the field, especially researchers, technicians, have that background more or less, how to complete the ecological loops, how to stay in the cycle. Then we suddenly have that ideal zero waste. Everything is in a cycle, there is no waste. That's fine. That is the intellectual part of it. But is this strong enough? There's a message for the masses, was my question. I understand that. I feed on it. I lap it up. I read another book. I'm fascinated. I'm motivated. But is that enough as a message, was my question? It is not. It is not. And to talk to people about waste doesn't work. Because waste is defined as I have lost interest in it. So how to bring back from another angle interest, motivation? When we talk to the government officials, you said, oh, there's corruption. No, we meet it. Handshake. We meet the corruption. You see, personally, how to create motivation? We know there is corruption. We know there's mismanagement. We know there's lack of skill. There's lack of technology, lack of technical implementation, etc., etc. How to create interest again? That was the beginning of my presentation. And there I'm ready to involve messages which are which can be, you can call them bold and courageous, but they can also be a walk on the edge. So, do I create interest in solid waste management with showing cleavage? No, sorry, that's the question I have. How far do I go? Because cleavage, walking through the room, all men go around. Done. Job is done. It's so simple. And they're all doing it. All the products are doing exactly that. So how far do I go with my vital message then? That is my whole problem. And we haven't succeeded. Sanitation is not picking up, solid waste management is not picking up. What message can I use to turn the heads around? Not only of men, also of women.
Make people suffer. The moment as well by suffering.
That is the cause of nature. I would like to be there before it hits. Before the tsunami hits, before the cyclone strikes, I would like to be there. That is my job, not wait. Then we don't have to do anything. We will all suffer one day. We are suffering.
Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah.
Maybe it's the problem of language, because all the times, for years and years, people are fighting against the war. They are fighting against poorness. Maybe it is that in that way that you can change the way it is treated by.
That is why I said fun, comfort, fun, status. What's wrong about it? Let me use it. That's exactly my point. I'm not telling you all you're living in shit and litter. I'm telling you, you want to have some fun. You want to have comfort. You want to have status, beauty. You want to be a big shot. I mean, anything. Which message will work? That's my whole approach.
A few hands. I thought here. Go ahead.
I was listening and there was something coming up about psychology, and I was trying to think about my approach, because if I'm here and it's available, the system, and the system takes care of itself, it's easier at home, I tend to work with the system. And I see that with myself, or the way I look at it, it's there is a sense of responsibility according to what I know and until what I know. And until, well, I do something and somebody else will take care of the rest. And as long as I don't know what happens to it, it's okay. So I can put my my stuff in the bin and somebody else takes it and dumps it somewhere and I don't see it, I don't... I think also in terms of when I was here 10 years ago in India, and still there was no plastic, and I still see this tendency of people to throw their waste and somebody else will take care of it. It was still a problem. You would walk in the street and it's full of decomposing waste, because some other person will come at night or will take care of it, but it was still this form of moving the responsibility to somebody else. Mm. And I find that when you something is missing when you don't have the picture of what's happening in terms of my waste or where it goes, or so when you know something, when you know what happens to the waste, and when you see it, when you actually go to the dump, and when you smell it, and when you, then it affects the most. It's when we have the contact with the process. When we only see part of the process, we can bury ourselves in that segment and get lazy about it and lose responsibility. But if you are aware of this line of it doesn't have to be also in terms of process, it's also where the food is coming from, because I was part of I was interested in moving to a place that was growing chickens, and then suddenly they were growing chickens as part of their, and I realized that a chicken that usually grows up in 3 months was grown in 1 month and a half just to produce food. It's just a way of creating food in a fast way, and you're not aware of this process. You just have the chicken on your plate. I don't eat chicken. It's what comes before and what comes after. We don't touch it, we don't smell it, we don't feel it, we don't see it. We hear it sometimes. The knowledge comes and goes, but the impact of the experience of living near it or smelling it or actually going with the bus and seeing what it means and how it affects the water, it doesn't touch so many people. So how can they be affected with knowledge that comes and goes? And knowledge is today is abundant. It comes from all over, and one day this is effective, the other day this is effective, but the actual experience, this day is... So this I'm thinking, how do you make the picture whole for the person to take responsibility, so he takes responsibility for smile.
And in response to that, I'll just like to say, that's where I really see the strength of like an integral model, is that really it's just a matter of taking multiple perspectives. So without having the different perspectives, if we look at it just from one viewpoint, it's not, you're not getting a whole picture of what's going on. And so that's what I'm hearing from that, is that we need to look from different angles, and that otherwise yeah, we can't really address the true situation there. So that's where I see the real strength of it. Wow, we have a lot of pens. I don't know. I think you were first, yeah. Or
I just think from the community point of view that no matter what messages or things are said to me, it's about at the end of the day what I see in front of me. If I see the same person who's giving me the message when he's hungry, after he's finished giving his talk, the presentation, I'm in a community, and I'm thirsty. Basically, I'm the presenter, and I'm hungry, and I go to the shop and buy a packet of chips. I don't see what is being told to me. Until I don't see that, I'm not going to listen to it. I may give you an impression that a presentation has been good. I will make you feel that I have listened to you, but internally, I don't walk with you. I have lived in villages of India for quite some time. I have worked on this. And these are what the communities feel. For so many years, government after government program, people after people have been coming and telling them what to do, how to improve their lives. How should they change, how the attitudes should change, how the behaviors should change. But the very people who talk about these changes, how do they reflect that in their lives? I want to ask a question. How many people over here have traveled in Indian trains? Has anybody traveled? And how many people have had coffee in the Indian trains? Or tea? What is done with those coffee mugs? Does everybody know that? That's good, Jay, but I'm saying things like this, the internal change is what we need to bring in the people around us. If there are people we need, I yell at my friends, I don't let them throw it. If I try to explain it to them and they don't listen to me, I collect it from them. Let me become the waste. Big deal, I'll become the waste basket. I'll carry it around with me. But at least somewhere this kind of, you know, there is an internal change needs to
come. Lead by example. Lead by example.
What you've done.
I just want to ask, what is the possibility of having a kind of, like a waste imagination workshop, where you have ideas like this, where people, if they are the instruments and it's not too capital intensive, you can contact piles and make things. There are people that make jewelry, that make wallets, other people that make clothes. Because waste isn't just waste. I mean, when it's seen as an output, of course it's waste, but it's an input for a multitude of other things. And our imaginations aren't fixed on all the things that waste can become. And if there was a space here in Auroville, a place where all of those ideas could be collected and people collectively work on that, and it can be for those that are needing waste for construction purposes, waste for whatever. I mean, and those, that's where the ideas would come. So those people could collect and there could be a central space where that can be worked on. The second thing is, I think what you've mentioned about people being aware of the full cycle of things, and I think children become very aware of what the full cycle of things are. I mean, when you're working on a farm, you recognize, I mean, certainly where I'm from, we use manure in order to clay up the courtyards. So things like that aren't thrown away. You immediately see what the value of that is because you see where it goes. And I think having something like a workshop where kids could see these are the possibilities of this waste, so when they're throwing things away, it automatically comes to their mind that this is not just a plastic bottle. This is actually a potential instrument that we use as a band at school. And if it's things like big waste landfills, that can give them a sort of a more scaled up consciousness of what waste is and where it goes. You take the kids to the landfills, you let them see it. They can see the entire life cycle of this waste, so that consciousness of where things are going is embedded early on. Because I think when life is scaled up and we move in such huge populations, we don't have awareness of where things go. And it's not just about waste, it's about clothes, where are the clothes coming from, where do they go when they're finished, where's my water coming from, everything. It's just too complex for us to conceive of. And when you can get glimpses at a young age of where things are going and where they're coming from, even if you don't actually know, the question can rise up in you when you want to throw something on the floor. I mean, for me, the question is always, who's going to pick this up? And I always know I can never answer that. Who's going to pick this up? So ultimately, there's no dustbin, I put it in my pocket and I throw it away later. End of story. You know? So I think that's that type of thinking is particularly key for children and in schools and for them to be raised with that awareness. And then something like a workshop where we can come up with more creative ways for waste that is reusable.
Would you like to organize that for us?
I'm replying to this. That platform is there more or less, or it is developing. There's a group of eco-service in Soma coming regularly together and gearing up to the next campaign. So if you want to link to that, that platform is on the way. So you could keep your input there. And whoever else is there who wants to be involved in waste, there's a platform for waste.
Waste, specifically.
Olga is involved. Many more people.
Sure, of course.
In the same line what you've been talking, we did this with children. We studied. The ecology study is compulsory in India, by the way. They just don't follow it. It's been by the court recognized that it's compulsory. Anyway, in our school, we do elements of this ecological study. And we brought the children, one group of children. Year from the year they've been doing this. They went to the eco service, we brought them also to the landfill, dump is not yet, maybe next year or this year. And we started this, we called it Life, Litter Free campaign, which is going on now. Twice we did. And those children who were participating in all these visits and they made their work, reports and presentations, whatever, they did even the materials for this Life campaign. But only a few children showed up. How it is, I don't know. But the ecology is hands-on, and we promote this, that the children from other schools, all children, despite of their age, or all ages, they can participate in that. And at the end of this campaign, we show them the sorting, how to sort out the things, where they go, how to do this. And this element, what you spoke about, that there should be a workshop to do, to make something else of this garbage. It can be, like tires can be converted into some statues or something that doesn't give this essence of rubbish, the trash. So this concept of has to be changed. And next campaign, Life, which is the 29th of January next year, is in preparation. Please join us. Share us with your ideas and whatever. You're welcome. Just look in the news, sometimes it is published. And we have regular meetings. We now have five groups. Everyone picks up some stage of preparation, some for cleanup, some for exhibition. There will be games and stuff like that. So you're welcome.
Thank you, Olga. I think it's 12 o'clock, so just I want to have a couple more comments, closing comments, and then Priya has something.
Well, I just wanted to respond to what Lucas was sort of asking about, like, with the message, like, what, when, like, how far do you go with the message? I thought that was a really interesting point because, to use something like these media images that we see using women depicting, you know, like, I don't know, using women as a way to get people to buy the cigarette or to do this practice. I think it brings up an interesting point because while it may be an effective way to get people at least interested, I think that maybe it's like lacking in a certain like social responsibility element because, I mean, as we all know, those images are not representative of real life and can be destructive to women as well as, you know, to men's perceptions of male-female relationships. So I think it kind of brings up this point of do we do something that we consider to be effective, that we know, like, okay, this, if we flash this image, this will get people to pay attention, and then maybe they'll do it. But then are they doing it because they understand the implications, or are they simply doing it because they're trained to think that way by media images? So I guess I think that I'd be really interested to see the film that you've done working with education, and I think that that could potentially be a more socially responsible way of using certain kinds of media.
But you see, my main statement in the PowerPoint presentation was you have to use human desire for fun, entertainment, status, etc. You have to use it in a positive way. So this example of the image in the room is slightly off track, but this is how it is used by the advertising companies. Now, but still, to address the fun, this is important. And it was said, where is the positive part? Where is the positive part? Well, that is the positive part. People want fun. People want to enjoy it. And there is nothing wrong about it. And that is what you address. That is why we do many things we do. I don't come for this seminar if I expect boredom.
Sure.
I expect some amount of excitement and fun, I'm ready to come. It is so all-pervasive and there's nothing wrong about it. The highest consciousness is only Satchit Ananda. So fun is of maybe that glimpse of that, but there's nothing wrong about it. So let's go for it, and it is not there, it's not enough there in the environmental messages and the messages for sanitation.
Yeah, because basically you're presenting something that isn't fun.
Yeah, but
so
if you say
base,
it is not fun.
You're presenting something that isn't fun as fun. You're asking people to have social responsibility.
But if it is resource management, there are ways to bring in the fun element, I'm sure. And we haven't, I have not seen the convincing message, and we have to.
No, but I think that can be artistically done through the campaign, whether the campaign is, a funny campaign that still carries a social message. But I don't think, you could have your cleavage dancing and somebody walking behind with the plastic bag.
It will not change behavior, I know.
And so that's set totally aside. You know, I got your attention and I'm doing something else.
I just I wanted to give Danya, I saw the hand up, and I don't know if any others were, but then I just wanted to have an opportunity to close the space, and then folks that want to stay and have more conversation, that'd be great. So Danya,
Don't close it after me because my notes are not these positive. I want to reflect a little bit. On this experience that I had in Berkeley for many years, actually having the Living Roots group stay with us for 3 months. And besides the fact that it was really a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed a lot of those times with the groups, there were also lots of challenges group-wise. This aspect of sustainability remained for me as a big question, because somehow they were brought to Berkeley based on the expectation that at least there would be an environment that would be able to model quite some of the aspects of sustainability, the solar power, the organic food, the organic garden, the wastewater treatment, and so on. But I also, although this group lived with us for 3 months, was left at the end of those 3 months still with the question, how much of this immersion, actually in a real life situation, is going to percolate down into their lives back in the US. And I don't have an answer for that, but I must own that it was one of the reasons why I got somehow discouraged and said, like, well, maybe I'm not so interested in having those groups stay with us anymore. And when Bindu or B invited me to take your group on a tour to Verkey, I was actually very reluctant, and I'm still sitting in a place like, how does even the person who's most motivated actually change the behavior in a significant way? And what I've come to at this point is that if you look at the entire psychological spectrum and the related behavior, I somehow suspect that there is a dimension of human nature, including my own, which is very addictive. Which means, if I get addicted to a certain message, which is a mainstream message about consumerism, it's all its bells and whistles, I just get used to it. And I start to become dependent on it, not just because I like all of it, because somewhere it defines my identity. And in being defined by that, I find commonality with others. But I think one of the questions I would ask myself, and you ask, is like, how do I deal with my addiction on a very primal level to the status quo? Yeah. Because the message is very clear for me. As Lucas says, I can read a lot of stuff about this, and I get crystal clear on the theoretical level, and even on a level of how to work with that interpsychically, but where does it change anything in my behavior? So a big question, and therefore the waste issue is one symptom of that. But we can look at all the problems in the world and say, yeah, these are all symptoms of somehow an addictive human behavior that we haven't come to terms yet with. And I don't think Oracle is so different in that sense. We have the same challenges there. So, if at all, I hope that your group by the end of those 3 months can give us some insight on that.
Thank you, Danny.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
Just one issue that has come up, particularly about your remarks about chickens, and one other person was making a remark, is the issue of distancing, which is a particularly modern problem or intensified in the modern context, which a fellow named Brewster Neen talks a lot about in books such as Farmageddon and From Land to Mouth. And how do we restore proximity, or the benefits that come from proximity by being able to take informed and responsible action when once we become distanced from the sources of our day-to-day material existence, such as the farmland and from the dump, and we just sort of exist in an atmosphere of ignorance where we don't know the consequences of our own daily choices. This is one of the, just, you know, Brewster Neen has come up with an interesting concept of distancing in which, you know, it describes the problem that a lot of modern people have because of the ignorance that comes with it. And that's where Lucas, you know, this campaign to educate people with shocking images.
But India is a land of lack of distance.
Yeah.
Here is why everybody has an impact. So I don't understand why the Indian talks about the distances.
No, here we do have proximity. We walk right into the waste, and that's where it's
disturbing. It's everywhere.
It doesn't seem to affect the person. Right.
Just add a little bit to what I said. Maybe relates to what you said also, but I had this question like, what if you would take a certain population here in the villages and you would totally immerse them for a year in a model of sustainable living? And then they go back, this is very theoretical, back into the normal life. How much of a percentage of them would actually be able to stick with that? And this is a relevant question from a research point of view, because if you put all this effort into finding out strategies to change behavior, the question would be relevant to say, if all the parameters are positive and constructive around a population that you want to change, then how many of them would actually be able to change and stick to that? It's not clear.
Well, I think these are really good. I mean, these are the crucial questions, I think, in terms of how we can you know, potentially solve these challenging problems. I'm really interested in continuing this. I just wanted to thank all the speakers that did take time today and everyone that shared, and just for those that want to leave right now, that's fine. And then I'm happy to continue this conversation. I'd really like to. So thank you. Maybe no one will leave now. We'll just keep going.
I had a little final
question. Go ahead, Brad.
What Danny was saying about addiction is a good way to define the vital plane of psychology in general, but it's usually referred to as habits. So habits are taken because they're enjoyable. So anytime you want to change a pattern that is enjoyable, even if it's unhealthy, it means breaking a habit. And so the whole idea of yoga is that you develop a willpower to actually break habits. And the idea that consciousness can have an influence on society is based on this idea, that we can actually willfully change habits, but it takes a considerable focus of willpower to do it. But then if you can put in their place another habit which is also enjoyable, but healthy, then you create a new vital pattern. So the end product of all of our environmental changes has to be sold from the point of view of its enjoyability. As long as we just keep making mental judgments about what's not healthy, we're not going to succeed very, very far in breaking the habits which are already established, even if they are unhealthy. They're enjoyable enough to maintain.
And on the other hand, there are tricks and ways and techniques to condition ourselves more healthily, like in yoga. Even simple conditioning or even implementing habits on a very mechanical level. That's the trick of the mantra. You go down to that level where things become automatic. You make that will very consciously, but you make it into an automatic conditioning. So there are in the realm of yoga, there are all these tricks, these techniques are there, no? For the highest purpose, you even use something which is just plain habit, conditioning. This mantra should be there on your tongue or in your mind whenever it's needed, all around the clock. This is not each time a conscious thing, not at all. You should have made it automatic. So attitudes should have become automatic. It is again a reconditioning of ourselves. But as you say, you have to offer one enjoyability against a bigger enjoyability. And the attractivity of Sri Aurobindo's yoga is that. If he would have offered the world a more frugal life, come on.
But for everybody, it is something else that we trigger that step towards something that is more enjoyable. Yes. That's yes. The whole crux of the matter. How can you get masses to move with one message that might only actually be applicable to a handful?
Yes.
So the differentiation of what moves one person and not another person, one group and not another group, is a whole challenge,
that's right?
But I think what the Lucas had, they're trying to motivate a village to clean up the streets and all of that. That benefits everybody, and I think it's more enjoyable to walk out your door and in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, then rather
and they do like it because they're just not exposed to it, but they do like it. You can picture a normal street and picture a clean street. And
that's why I said when we brought these kids here from 6 hour tribes, they went back with enthusiasm.
Mm.
The kids are the easiest, I would say, in spite of what Olga says.
The thing is that they don't believe it's possible.
But these kids believe.
Convince them that it's possible.
There is one problem in India which nobody spoke of yet. That to dispose, to deal with garbage is something which is in the caste system is not permitted, and we don't look into that big issue. It's an inner kind of upbringing. So they can't really deal with that garbage, even if they would like to. They would like to clean their streets, but there's nobody there of that caste who would do that. But if you bring a twist, and I thought about suggesting you something, because Martha speaks about supramental manifestation, that it will never take place where it is not pure, perfect cleanliness. So cleanliness, inner and outer, is a must. The purity is the condition of this manifestation. If you bring this view in a religious terms, that cleanliness not only within the house, not only within, but also within an environment, it might be it. For many, many villages.
But there are villages which have broken that barrier. That caste barrier between the head who knows everything and the hand who has to do the cleanup. I mean, the one who shits and the one who takes care of it. There are villages who have done it. In Tamil Nadu, we have a few exceptional villages. In the northeast, which is largely Christian, northeast of India, we have villages and communities They're most beautiful. They're the most exceptional in India. And I myself have seen in Manipur, the shop owners go out and weep the road.
But these are only a few examples.
Yes, but yes, there are examples. But even in Tamil Nadu, there are a few pockets here and there where things have happened. So it seems that the caste is one of the root of the problem. Absolutely correct. But it seems it can be broken. So one has, and it is usually carried by one charismatic Panchayat leader for 10 years. It happens. But it needs mass support. Otherwise this is not sustainable and will not be sustained. That one community leader, Panchayat leader, will be somewhere.
If you organize groups from different castes who are doing this, it's a regular thing. You can break the habit. Mm-hmm. And you can bring some other perception. But I thought about this, that even us go out and do this. But then we will be named Velakaras crazy, you know, trying to bring something which is not working.
We have dealt with this problem here in Auroville. You see the first Velakara working on the land only in the loincloth. They have often put themselves down into the lower caste. By the way they clothe themselves and they behave and they talk, they have categorized themselves, they have defined themselves, which was stupid. But by taking the mantri, you do not yet do it. Taking the mantri in the hand, do you not yet put yourself into the, you are obviously lower caste because you are the manual worker. Mm. It is not that simple. But if you adopt a whole image, you have done it, sorry. You are one of us, lower caste.
Would I just
that's
wanna...
not a solution.
No, that's not a solution. That's what I mean, because you want to preach that, right, you want to say, no, management and manual worker, brain and hand have to be together and possibly in the same body. Because the problem is in India, with lots of crafts work, that the distance from the brain to the hand is kilometers long.
I just want to address... kind of the example Danya was talking about, where if you took a bunch of, like a lot of villagers and exposed them to sustainable practices for a long time, and then they go back to their village, and the challenge that I see is that, so you change people's behaviors, you change people's thinking, you change the way that they're thinking about it, introduce them to new ideas, and the problem is then you go back to a structure that's already designed in a way that does not allow for change. So even you get back to that structure and you're frustrated because it's like, I can't even actually change what's going on. So really, I see it as this, you need multiple approaches at the same time. You need to be able to change people's perceptions and their habits, their will to change their behaviors, at the same time as changing the structures that allow for that to occur. So through, you know, government or, you know, affecting on the like larger structural level. And so that, I mean, that takes a multi, like, step approach, and that's at least that's the way that I see. You can't just affect someone's psychology and then have them change immediately. That's a huge part of it, because otherwise, without the you know shift in perception, it's not going to happen. But then you also have to change on the larger system.
The issue which you addressed, that it is more complex vision of us living in this world. We were addressing yesterday. And Shobindu speaks about it as a type man. There is type man, which is not integral man. Type man is only that I am a man of knowledge, and you are a man of working, and you are a man of service, and you are a man of some kind of, you know, artist. We are all different, and because of this we produce a lot of garbage in between, which we cannot really solve. And that's the problem, that we are not really fully integral. That means that I am Chaturvarnya. I will speak in Indian terms. I am a man of knowledge, I am a man of power, I am a man of production and man of service at the same time. So this idea is crucial for India's change. And without it, there will be no solution for the garbage, because garbage is produced by partial, typal participation. And because we are not fully developed, and we do not have even this in mind, it is pushing us towards this, we do not see this concept yet of integral man. What does it mean? Shubhendu says, a type man is not integral man. you can solve the problem like it is solved in Norway. There are 6 or 5 bins for different types of garbage. Yes? And if it is not correctly put, they will not take it. So you will have to take care of it in everybody's house. So you have to sort it out before, and they will deal with that. But that is not a solution on the broader scale, you will see. Mm. So it's not coming.
I'd love to comment on that.
Yes, right.
Because I mean, this is so paramount, the understanding of what is an integral approach to solve a problem. And the assumptions that are floating around that, because if you have Norway as an example with waste management and the system that you just speak about, it seems to work fine because you're addressing not integrally that person, but you can still, from an integral perspective, address that problem at the level that you can create the most leverage to help the person move towards whatever else is the next step for that person or the population. There, it seems behavioral change and conditioning is a very good approach. If you start talking about, well, this is not an integral approach and you should be doing this in this and such way, it will never work. So I think.
No, I didn't mean that.
I'm just trying to clarify that.
I really meant something else. It is much more the way the approach to man in that country, in Norway, is much more integral because you will have to deal with that, everyone. Mm-hmm. So everybody is involved. And everybody is a part of this system. He is not like this. It's much more diluted. Everybody is in his caste, in his world, doing his thing for himself. So here is still much to go. But still, that is not the solution until we look even deeper and we will find that vision of the integrality of man in his consciousness, that he has to be chaturvarnya. And only then the problems will be solved. Not only garbage problems, all other problems also. But that's what for our will was created, I guess. We all have to learn how to become this chaturvarnya. So we are gradually growing into that understanding. It's first understanding, which we don't have yet. We are already pushed to the limit, and we have to discover this problem.
Pushing to the limit helps you to search for the understanding because you're stuck up against the wall with the garbage and you have to get out. So then you need the way out.
You can imagine my friends from Russia came to visit India. He's an Indologist. So the couple went to Jagannath Puri, the most famous temple in India. And what they saw? The walls, 5 meters high? Jagannath Puri inside, and from the wall, from the top, there is garbage going down around the temple. And pigs and dogs and everybody there, cows and people on that garbage hill. And they are not allowed to come, they have to see over that garbage hill to the Jagannath Puri because it is a pure place of purity. Can you imagine to what ridiculous level it came? And people don't see it up to now, so there must be some deeper problem.
I have just one question, because I know many people come to visit Oregon, quite a few. And what do they leave with when they leave Oregon? I mean, do they also see the problems? Do they see also the facts that what you have to deal with to survive here, or what problems are visible in the downfall, or what solutions do you get when you are creative? I mean, it is also something that visitors leave when they, or it's just this effect from Matramandir, or what? I mean, you were talking about an example about the temple and
yeah, just to become conscious of these problems and to try to find solutions in our own lives and communal life.
Yeah.
And words partially and partially present.
But there is a lot to do with that. I think there can be a difference. There can be a difference. Can they see it? Or not just the beautiful things, but also the bad things?
Good to see that. Thank you.
we are at least conscious.
Yeah.